all who have served on land, at sea, and in the air. KBAC.rocks would like to thank all the men and women of the armed forces. We thank you. What's up, Coda Eye Radio Network? This is your boy, the Barbecue Man, DJ Barbecue, with the latest edition and a special edition on this glorious day, November 11th, Veterans Day. We say thank you to all the men and women who have served and sacrificed something that we can never repay back. We talk to Batman, Sioux Falls Batman that it is, the Dark Knight, Terry Mackey. He has a military background, and we'd like him to share his stories about wrestling, about his days and time in the military. All this and more on today's Uncut Live on the Coda Eye Radio Network, powered by KBAC.rocks. Also today, sponsored by Jekyll and Hyde Barbecue out of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Barbecue so good, it'll make a smile on your face. And also sponsored by today, Remedy Brewing Company, for the remedy that ails you. MidwestAllProWrestling.com. Go to MidwestAllProWrestling.com for tickets and feel the excitement. All right, Terry, thanks for calling in. We're talking to you again today because you have a special thing, because today would be Veterans Day. We'd like to hear some stories, if you have, about, you know, famous pro wrestlers that you did, because we always like listening to your stories about pro wrestling. If there's people not familiar who Terry Mackey is, Terry Mackey is actually the knight in shining armor in the Midwest. He is the Dark Knight himself. He is Batman. Terry, thank you for coming in again.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on once again.
No problem, man. I do feel really connected to what you've done in your past, because of my family, my uncle, great uncles, dad, cousins, you know, you name it. We all have friends that have been in the military, and with your background, I'd like to hear some kind of, you know, in honor of Veterans Day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's kind of like we talked about before. I, you know, spent 22 years in the military, retired out of the Army, and back here in 2016. But yeah, you know, what a great 22 years of my life. Got to do a lot of cool things, got to meet a lot of cool people. You know, let's see, where can we start? So yeah, I guess in 1994, we went to basic training in September 94. And me and three other of my high school classmates from a big whopping class of 27 kids out of the Oneida area here in central South Dakota. And I went out to there. That was kind of my first time ever on an airplane and my first time away from South Dakota. Didn't really get out too much as a kid, and, you know, growing up here in the great state of South Dakota. So it was kind of a cool adventure. Always wanted to join the military, kind of felt that calling with myself. And so I went ahead and did that. And let's see, where could the guys start, I guess? I guess start from the beginning is probably the best place, isn't it?
Well, what were you looking into doing when you were joining the military? Because, I mean, it's always different. Everybody has a different feeling. I know that I wanted to join, but unfortunately, the physical part, when I was younger, I had some bad knees. I didn't really pass the physical part of that, so I kind of didn't go to what I wanted, but my dad was never disappointed. He said at least I went in with it, like I promised, and I kept my promise of trying to go in there.
Sure.
When you were, you know, a teenager, what was your first thoughts? What did you want to do?
You know, I guess I wasn't really sure. I was kind of undecided what I really kind of wanted to do. I just kind of wanted to sit down with someone and kind of talk about the different jobs that are available and things that we did. And I'd end up going into the infantry, and, you know, being from the Midwest here in South Dakota, you know, a lot of us hunt and fish and do all that good outdoorsy stuff.
Right.
And and for me, I think that was just one of the stepping stones for me, was, you know, that was the best way to travel the world and see different places and meet a whole bunch of cool people and things like that. And so that's what I did. I joined the infantry, and so I went through the School of Infantry after basic training, and then I got stationed in Camp Pendleton in California there, just north of San Diego. I was with 1st Battalion, 5th Marines. And as soon as I hit my unit, man, we went straight to Okinawa, Japan for 6 months. We were the forward deployed unit in case any, you know, actions or anything like, you know, went down around the world or whatever. We'd be the first battalion, I guess, as you'd say, first unit to deploy. And so that's kind of cool. Got to spend 6 months in the Far East. And from there, we went to cool places like Korea, Thailand, Guam. My first time I ever went to Hawaii was with the military. We actually got to sit on Battleship Row, and that was pretty awesome. And being there and part of the history and learning about, you know, the real part of, you know, Pearl Harbor, and you know, talking to the veterans and you know, historians and things like that. So that was really cool for me. Again, growing up, never seeing nothing, never doing nothing, and so that was pretty awesome. And then so I spent my first 4 years there. We went back to Okinawa again. Like I said, we got to train with the Korean Rock Marines. We got to I got to be part of the Special Operations Training Group. We got to train with a couple Navy SEAL teams, couple Charlie teams, Charlie 1-1, some, you know, recon guys, Green Beret units, things like that, from the different forces. It's kind of a joint task force. And we did that for about 30 days, and that was really cool, getting to spend time with these guys. And, you know, they hold the level, you know, I mean, they're the world's most elite, you know, SEAL teams and guys like that. But I tell you, you know, off duty, off site, you know, sitting back in, you know, Tent City or whatever, with these guys playing cards, and they're just the coolest, most laid back, relaxed guys. And you think they'd be all strung up, you know, and with adrenaline and everything else, but these are actually some of the coolest guys I'd ever met and talked to. And, you know, can't tell any of the stories, but, you know, it was pretty cool that meeting guys like that, you know, that have done some really cool, you know, black op stuff, and that they shared that, you know, their experiences with us. So that was pretty cool. So yeah. And then, so 1998, I reenlisted for the first time with the Marine Corps, and that's when I went to Wentzville Training Battalion. And that's where I met, you know, Randy Orton. I kind of talked about that on the previous podcast. I don't know if we want to tell that story again or not, but
That's up to you. I mean, I think that was pretty cool that how you met Randy Orton. I mean, that was during the time, I think, even before he was even thought about really in the pro wrestling scene, because I think he wanted to join the military.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's up to you, I mean, this is your stage. You go ahead and
this is just a way to honor you and everybody else. Yeah, no, it was. Well, it's such a cool time, you know, and like I said, with the Monday Night Wars going on with, you know, Raw versus Nitro and, you know, NWO, DX, you know, Nation, things like that, and all the cool factions were going on back then. You know, you had the black and white NWO versus the red and black NWO, and DX versus the Nation, and all these cool factions going on. And the Monday Night Wars were just, you know, in the highlight of their peaks in the era when I got there to Wentzville Training Battalion. And yeah, lo and behold, about a year later, that's when, yeah, Mr. Randall Keith Orton came through. And, you know, when you watch his video series, and I forget them what it is, you know, whatever it is, the Catch a Predator or whatever they called it. And, but yeah, he did, you know, in his, I guess his background or whatever, when they're interviewing, he said, you know, I just wasn't doing a whole lot. I was living downstairs still in mom and dad's, you know, basement on the couch. Didn't really have a direction in life. And, they're like, yeah, why don't you join the Marine Corps? You know, that'll give you the life basics and, you know, your direction and things like that. And so we did. And like I said, I was fortunate enough to where when he came to basic training to shoot on the rifle marksmanship phase, of which I handled when the kids come up there to qualify in the second phase of Marine Corps boot camp, then that's what they and that's what he did. And he came onto my range. And so that whole week just created a lot of hype, and it was really awesome that he was there. And the first day he showed up, like I said, the guy Jason Wiley, I'll never forget, from Georgia, come running down to the sound cart, and where I was running the range, and, dude, you need to come down and talk to this recruit. You need to come talk to this. I was like, dude, I don't give a crap about no recruits, man. I'm not talking to nobody. And he's like, no, you want to meet this kid. You want to meet this kid. I was like, why? He's like, this is Cowboy Bob Orton's son. You know, and it's like, okay, yeah, whatever. And so we went down there and talked to him, and sure enough, you know, like I said, it was Randall. And so, yeah, just, you know, super nice kid, real, you know, real shy, real timid. But, I mean, guys are kind of like that in basic training. You know, you don't really talk out of line, and, you know, especially the Marine Corps basic training. And you don't talk without the drill instructor's permission and stuff like that. So we had to kind of back his drill instructors off a little bit, like, hey, this kid's kind of famous if you didn't know. And so we got to spend time with him and talk to him about cool stuff, about the WCW power plant growing up and knowing, you know, Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan and the Ric Flairs and, you know, all them cool guys from back in his dad's day, and, you know, Vince McMahon and what's going on in the world of wrestling. So that was really, really cool getting the chance to meet him. And so that was kind of the first one that kind of kicked it off of, you know, the long line of people that I would come across over time. And so right after that, in 2000, I got selected for recruiting duty. And the dreadful recruiting duty, nobody wants to go on recruiting duty. Everyone does what they do to get out of recruiting duty. And it's one of them duties where, you know, you don't want to partake in. You know, the guys are like, hey, this is how you get out of this duty. You know, you want to be a drill instructor or go embassy duty for your B billet. And and what the B billet is throughout your time in the military, you have to do like one of the three. You have to be a successful recruiter, you got to be a successful drill instructor down on the I think they call it down the lane or whatever it is, and on the field and stuff like that, or else you go to embassy duty and do Marine security guard duty somewhere throughout the entire world, on a ship, whether it's at an embassy, you know, at the actual White House, Camp David, something like that. You have to do a tour and complete a 3 to 4 year billet on that, and in order to get promoted and move on with your career. Like every Marine, every Army guy, every Navy, sailor, airman is required the same thing. And so I got selected for recruiting duty and for Marine Corps command. And so I went to recruiter school. I think it was, now we're talking about the end of September of 2000 or so, and then come on recruiting duty. I was stationed up in Bloomington, Minnesota, up there in the cities. It was kind of my territory. And then, unfortunately, you know, the later events of a year later, when September 11th, you know, kicked off with the whole attack on, you know, American soil and everything like that, it really changed the perspective of Americans. It really changed the whole aspect of recruiting duty, kind of from where we were and where we went to. And, you know, so, I mean, it was both good and bad. You had those parents, you know, and I always call it liberal Minnesota. You know, liberal Minnesota is pretty, pretty diehard, you know, anti-military folks up there. And even after September 11th, when, you know, America kind of rallied themselves around each other and really learned what becoming one nation was again, everything else, it was still kind of trouble up there. But the one cool thing that about it was, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of tributes, there's a lot of memorials, there was a lot of shows, a lot of concerts, you know, and everything like that, that do, you know, extra special things with the veterans, come out and do color guards and things like that for their concert series and stuff. And the first one we ever did was up there at Canterbury Downs, there at the Canterbury Racetrack. So they had a end of the summer tour. Every weekend was a different theme. Your first weekend was like the oldies. Second weekend was like your R&B and rap festival. The third weekend was the CMA, CMT country, you know, festival and stuff like that. And so for that, I got selected as one of the flag members to come out and hold the flag up. And Jody Messina was up there performing the national anthem. She did that, and then she did God Bless America. And so after her, well, up was Montgomery Gentry, and then after them was Brad Paisley. And it was really cool. And you know, I don't generally like to talk bad about people, but Joni Messina, she was the nicest person, I'll be honest with you. And she didn't want to meet us. She didn't want to talk to us. She didn't want to take her photo with us after the event was done, after we got up there with her on the stage. And so that kind of put a bad taste in my mouth for her. And that was the time when she was real popular and stuff like that. But, you know, I guess it is what it is. Everyone's a little bit different, takes fame a little bit differently, I guess. But So we got to meet Montgomery Gentry. They came right up to us, and Boy, I tell you, those are some big dudes. And so I was at Troy and what's his name? How's the big guy? John Michael's brother. Anyway, Gentry or whatever. He's a big dude. He's like 6 foot. God, he's probably 6'7", I suppose, or so. Troy was like 6'5", but just the kindest dudes. And Mr. Gentry, he took his cowboy hat off. He had an American flag bandana on underneath his hat. We sat there and we got pictures with him and, BS with them back behind the stage. And just, I mean, just cool dudes and just humble guys. And they must have thanked us for our service 1,000 times over. And, just got the chance to talk with them guys. And they asked, just, where are you guys from? And, where's your family from? Do you have your families? Are you married? Do you have any kids? And just super, super good country boys and super nice guys. And so that was really awesome. And I still have all these pictures with them and stuff. And then Brad Paisley, he was the same way. This is prior to, Mrs. Paisley. I think he was dating oh, what was her name? I can't remember her name. She was a fellow CMA star, CMT star, whatever, country star, way back when. But anyways, he was super nice too. Brad was real, real cool. We didn't get as much time with him because he was kind of walking up to the stage or whatever. So only got some quick photos with him and got to talk to him for a little bit or whatever. So that was really awesome. And so the next couple of years, every year, we got the chance to sit down with a bunch of, famous people like that. And so that was really cool. Some of them not so nice, obviously a lot, others were very, very nice. So I think my favorite star, well, two of them, I guess. The first one was Darryl Worley. And so right before I got off of Marine Corps recruiting duty, I was here in Sioux Falls. I was working at the MEP station right there at the corner of Kiwanis and 41st Street, and Darryl Worley and Sarah Evans came to town. And so me being the Marine Corps recruiter, we have fun gifts. We have T-shirts, we have lanyards, we have all sorts of, goody-goody items to hand out and everything like that. So I was working at the Sioux Falls Arena at the time, part-time, just for kind of something to do or whatever. So him and Sarah Evans came, and that was, he did his big hit, Have You Forgotten? Pretty much, I think that was in 04. So they came to do the show, and as we come in and we go, as we check in and we get our shirts and all that stuff and get briefed for the night and everything like that, there's the gal who did it now, she's passed away or whatever, but she was a super nice lady. So when I came in that night, I gave her, like, it was like a hat, a lanyard, I think a Marine Corps cup or something, maybe a hat or whatever. I was like, hey, when you see Darryl Worley, could you please give him these for us, in honor to basically say thank you. It was him and Toby Keith spent a lot of time over in Iraq and Afghanistan putting on free shows for the troops,
Right.
and going over and entertaining them and everything else. So I was super excited when Darryl came. And the funny thing about that story, too, and I'll just kind of throw in there too, is the fact that the manager of the arena at the time, his name was Russ. When you go to work for the arena, you have to sign a confidentiality clause, like a declaration saying, hey, I will not use my position or title to, to approach the talent and, artists and all the stuff and everything else. I won't do what I, blah, blah, blah. And so whatever, I guess. So I kind of broke that treaty authorization, whatever I did. And so it's kind of funny. So lo and behold, the young lady that I gave the stuff to, she ended up giving that stuff to Darryl Worley. Well, Darryl Worley asked Russ and them, like, hey, I want to meet the Marine who gave me this stuff. So they come in, they pull me out back and pull me in the hallway. So you want to kind of tell us what's going on? I'm like, no, I don't know what's going on. Why? What's going on? What are we talking about here? Like, well, when you came to the arena tonight, did you give Darryl Worley some stuff? I said, well, no. I wish I would remember her name. But anyway, and just like Gloria for all intents and purposes. So basically, gave Gloria, this stuff to give to Darryl Worley. And they're like, that's a no-no. We could fire you right now, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, you guys understand MAC duty military, right? Like, I do this for, like, just extra money in my pocket. Like, I don't need this job. You want to take my shirt off my back? Please do. And no. It's just Darryl Worley's asked to meet you. I was like, what? And they're like, yeah, he wants to meet you right now. So let's go. He's back in food catering. So we went back there, and he's a big dude too. I had no idea how it was like, where are they growing these country music stars at? And
right.
He's same. He's like 6'7", 6'8", just ginormous, big old arms, probably 22-inch guns. And so he's wearing a brown shirt with no sleeves on it. And I'm just like, holy cow, where are they getting these guys at? And so like, hey, you the guy that brought me this stuff? I'm like, yes, sir. My name's Staff Sergeant Terry Mackey with the United States Marine Corps. And he's like, hey, I just want to say thank you so much, you know, Staff Sergeant and everything else for giving me this and that. And I was like, oh, man, that's really cool. And I said, no, I appreciate, you know, what you and Toby Keith do for the truth for my brothers and sisters overseas and everything else. And he's like, I'll tell you what, after the show, once you meet me out back by the tour bus, we'll get some pictures, you know, bring you on the bus, we'll sit down, we'll hang out. And I'm like, man, for real? He's like, yeah, absolutely, for real. And so it was so cool and such a super class act of him to do that. And then so right before he ended the show, they're doing their instrumental intro into, you know, Have You Forgotten? And he's talking about his time in Iraq and Afghanistan with the troops and everything else. And so I'm standing in front of the stage. I'm part of the stage crew or whatever. So I'm kind of standing off to, if you're looking at him, off to the right, and it's pretty much the corner of the stage here on the right. And so he's talking about his times and everything, and I'm kind of mellowing up, you know, kind of getting goosebumps listening and talk about the troops and everything else. He had awesome words. And then he talked about me. He's like, yeah, so before the show, I had a staff sergeant here of Marines that brought me like a hat and a lanyard and all this other stuff and wanted to tell me thank you. But I was like, no, thank you, staff sergeant. I want to thank you once again, once more. And everyone's hooping and hollering. I'm standing there like, oh my God, what's about to go on? So he come over and he tapped me right on the shoulder. Right there on stage, and I turned around and he shook my hand in front of God and everybody. He went up and he finished the song and he walked off. And I thought that was so cool. And I thought, you know, wow, what a class act, you know?
Yeah,
and
that's really cool.
Yeah, that was super cool, man. I was like, the whole rest of the night, I'm on the high, like, yeah, that's right, that's me he's talking about, you know. And so it was really cool, and he honored his word, you know. After the show, after I got done with all my, you know, checkoffs for the night, I was able to go and be released and went out there and knocked on his bus door, and his driver got him, and he come down and we took pictures, took me up on the bus, kind of gave me a tour of this whole bus and everything. And I'm like, this really is like a, you know, a Cadillac on wheels, you know what I mean? They're like, these things are awesome. I'm like, wow. And so that was really cool, you know, for him to do that, you know, and keep his word and honor his word. And he's just, again, a super solid dude. And so that was really cool. I guess my next story is we met Toby Keith here at the Sioux Empire Fair. So after I got out of the Marine Corps, and when I switched over to the Army, switched over in 2004, got on recruiting duty in 2005, and I was here on Sioux Falls in the summer of 2006, I think it was, or maybe it's the summer of 2005, either one. But Toby Keith came, it might have been 2005, he came here to the Sioux Empire State Fair. That's when they drove down and gave him like a brand new Harley Davidson, an outrageous amount of money to bring him here or whatever. And one of the guys in our recruiting station was actually on the Sioux Falls Empire board. And as a contest, hey, whoever the top recruiter of the company is, along with, you know, Sergeant First Class Smith and the company commander and the company first sergeant and all this stuff, you guys will go and meet Toby Keith backstage at the show. And we're like, oh, sweet. So I was number one recruiter for the reserves. So I was like, yeah, I'm in. And so I got to go backstage and meet him. And he gave us all his personal Toby Keith coin that he gives to like all the brigadier generals and colonels and, you know, like Jordan, you know, Norman Schwarzkopf and guys like that, you know, over in Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, the all the people that come and meet him and escort him around or whatever. So I thought that was really cool of him. So again, he's a big dude. He's, you know, 6'6", 6'7", and he was pretty shy. I mean, he was pretty quiet and didn't say a whole lot and just kind of hung out and took pictures. And like I said, just didn't really get a lot out of him. But I don't know if it's just humbling for him or if it's just, I don't know, maybe just another okay, yeah, I meet more soldiers kind of a thing or something. I don't know, but that was really cool. So I got a still have his coin. I got it all framed up here with I had him sign one of his CD case covers for me. So I got like his CDs case cover, our picture, and then like that coin in the middle of a picture frame here at the house. I thought that was pretty cool. So then he gave us his own personal coin. And so that was really awesome. You know, another good experience that, again, learning, getting what, through the military.
I want to ask, when you were telling these stories and stuff in the military and then you got to meet all these famous people, what was it like? I mean, we always see, like, celebrity entertainers in any type of area of entertainment always doing these for the soldiers. What does it really mean to you as someone that has sacrificed all? Because I mean, I've said thank you for your service earlier off the show, and I still say that today, but that's like just not enough to say thank you to everybody who has sacrificed everything that you guys have and women have sacrificed. And my thing is like, let us know, what is that, how does that make you feel being gone away from your families and you see that entertainment? What is it, I mean, what does it do for you?
You know, it's a, unless you've served in the military, you don't really know what it all means. You know what I mean? And, you know, I'll be honest, you know, that's one of the things I miss the most about being in uniform, doing the job every day, getting up to put the uniform on every day to go out to do my job, and, you know, people out in the communities, you know, thanking me for our service and stopping and shaking our hand and things like that. But, you know, I mean, it means a lot, you know. You don't really know what people go through unless you've been there yourself, you know, until you've laced up a pair of combat boots and been gone from your family for, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, 18 months. You don't really know what all that means and how much that means. And, I mean, obviously it means a lot, you know, whether it's, you know, Joe Blow on the street or it's Toby Keith or, you know, anybody, you know, I mean, that means a lot. You know, there's a sense of pride and swelling there when people tell you, thank you for your service, you know, and, you know, it's such an honor to do that. You know, it means so much to me, you know, the American flag, and I'm still, every time when I hear the national anthem, I get goosebumps on the back of my neck, because that's what it means to me. You know, that's right. What it meant to me to serve this country and all the brothers and sisters that I've met along the way, you know, through active duty, recruiting duty, and all the different jobs that we've held. And, you know, putting other people in the military, you know, I still have a few kids that are in the military that I actually was their recruiter and put them in, and they contact me all the time and tell me about their promotion and you know, the things that they're doing, and you know, and they thank me for, you know, helping them get in the military, and, you know, and that means, you know, just as much as anything else. And, I mean, it means the world to a lot of people, you know. It's goes without saying, like, you know, someone who's at a job, you know, if you're at a job where your boss never says thank you, never says, you know, thank you for your hard work, thank you for your dedication, and it goes unnoticed, you know, that's hard, you know. And for military folks, it's just simple that right there of, you know, hey, thank you for your service, thank you for your dedication, your time from being away, you know. And I don't know, maybe it's because I'm a service member or whatever, but to me, a lot of those thank yous belong to the spouses and the dependents, you know, to the wives, to the children, to the husbands, to the children, of those service members, because they go through it just as much, you know, as we do as a service member. You know, they feel it just as much being back here at home, having to go through that day-to-day transgressions with the kids and having no breaks and, you know, doing the things that they got to do while we're forward deployed. You know what I mean? So,
right.
I think the thank you for your service goes just as much to the service members as it does to their family and their spouses and their children, because they feel it and they serve every day too. And you know, that was the one thing that I thought was cool, that I felt from good leaders to great leaders would acknowledge that, you know, not just thank you for the service women, thank you for giving us your husbands, thank you for giving us your wives, but thank you for supporting them, thank you for being there supporting them and allow them to do the things that they're allowed to do. And so I mean, it means the world, you know, to hear that. And 3 years later, you know, I even tell service members, thank you so much for your service. When I see you know, especially when I worked at the VA for like those 18 months, you know, constantly thanking guys for their service. And whenever I see somebody out in the town with a Korean War veteran, Vietnam War veteran, Iraqi War veteran, you know, Afghanistan, I never got to go there. I've never, you know, felt the pressures and stresses of combat stress and have those, you know, but I thank countless service members each and every day for their service. When I see someone, that's the number one thing that I do. And I'm trying to make my kids do the same thing, you know, thank you for your service, you know, thank you for the, you know, the things that you did for us and for our country. So I feel that's only right. You know, they came before us, they set the stage before us, and I wouldn't have been able to do that if they hadn't done their time and did what they've done. So,
right. You know, I'm in the same way as I, you know, with my relatives. My dad was in the Navy. My ex-father-in-law was in the Navy. My great uncle was in the Marines. My grandfather, who was in the Army, And then his brothers were, I mean, all the way back to like World War II, World War I maybe. There's a lot of years apart between them. And then all my other family members that are in or are now. I try to get my son to tell anyone that he sees, especially with hats. A lot of them wear hats. I tell them that say that they're a veteran of certain wars or a certain time or a certain military branch, and I tell them to go say thank you for your service. I get choked up on this because I see a lot of stuff that happens on you know, with families when they see their moms or their dads leave, or their brothers and sisters, uncles, you know, whoever it is. It's hard. I see this. I see the stress on the kids. As a youth coach, I was coaching teener baseball and coach pitch and, you know, flag football. And I seen the attitude of the child, the little boy or the little girl, you know, it just drastically changes because, you know, dad's not there, mom, you know, so on and so on. So, you know, it's just saying thank you to me isn't enough yet. I mean, it is a very small little, but, there's nothing that we can ever say or repay back to all of you that would even fill up to what sacrifice that you've done. So I just wanted to say that out there too.
No, and I appreciate that, and you're absolutely right. I mean, that by far was the toughest job I think I've ever had, you know. And it's a different world with the military. And again, you know, you get proud, you know, you're the one serving and everything else. And but like I said, to me, you know, having, you know, my ex-wife at the time and now my current wife at the time, you know, both supporting me. And because if you don't have that love and support when you come home, you know, it makes it twice as difficult to do. And yeah, the sacrifices that these, you know, service men and women make, you know, as a career choice, you know, we make that decision to, you know, countless nights away from home, countless nights in the fields, countless nights away in a faraway country. You know, I've missed birthdays, Christmases, Thanksgivings, you know, all those major holidays for the lack of the better good, you know, for the cause of the greater good, you know, of the American people in this country. And people don't know what that means. You know, people have never served, you know, and it just, but again, you know, like I said, thank you. You know, to me, yeah, it is enough. Sometimes, I don't know, you know, people have sometimes a hard time of accepting that, you know, even as like Batman, a lot of times, you know, people thank me for my service and what I do as Batman, you know, and I feel like it's the right thing to do. I feel like it's the best thing to do, you know, and sometimes, you know, it's hard to take that, like, you know, hey, thank you, you know, thank you. But I don't know, you know, some people have a hard time accepting, you know, a thank you or a gratitude or, you know, show of gratitude and stuff like that, you know. But definitely, I mean, it's well deserved, it's well welcomed. I mean, absolutely, it's awesome, it's an amazing feeling. So yeah, it if any of the listeners ever want to know, you know, I challenge you to go out to like YouTube. I still do it now every now and again, just to, you know, feel that warmth and being there in those parents' shoes, those surprise homecomings. You know, I dare you to watch one. I don't care if it's a 5-minute video, I don't care if it's a 30-minute video, I dare you to watch one of those and not cry. All right. You know what I mean? To show the love. And like I said, me being a service member, I cry. I cry like a little baby girl every time, and I'm not afraid to admit that. And because it's so powerful, and I know what that feels like to be gone. You know, the most I've ever gone from my family was 9 months. And I know what that feels like to come home and feel the love of your mom's hug for the very first time, or your wife's hug, or your children's hug that you haven't seen. Because, like I said, they serve every minute that you do. And like I said, man, especially them kids, you know, not having dad there or not having mom there. And, you know, everyone trying to get the used to that new feel and going about your life without having somebody there. And that's difficult. And the times that, you know, they're not able to call home for weeks, you know, their missions take home and you have no idea what's going on there. People need to realize there is zero contact, you know, in a lot of these forward deployed battle areas. You know, I don't know so much about now, but I know back in the day when the first Iraq and all that stuff war kicked off, you know, men and women weren't allowed to, you know, jump on the phone every night. You weren't allowed to get to an email access every night, you know, to talk to your family. So your family listening to CNN or Fox News, you know, just going crazy because they haven't heard from you. You know what I mean? You just don't understand the stressors that puts on a soldier and or, you know, their family. And
yeah, the mentality.
Yeah, the mentality of that, you know. So, yeah.
Well, but, I mean, as somebody that has sat at home, and that's, you know, it's not really a nice way to say it because they're not just sitting at home, but the ones that are on the sidelines from this, I can say though, I've seen just for my experience with friends or family members, you need to make sure that if you can't go and talk to, you know, other family members, go find that friend or go find that person that's not a close friend that you've, you know, had certain acquaintances with that you can talk to, you feel comfortable talking to, because otherwise it's going to weigh on your mind and it's going to drive you completely, like, you know, just, I don't even know what the word to say, but it'd be just go and take that time to talk to somebody or listen to them, because they're probably having a bad day because of it. I've caught myself, you know, doing that, and someone goes, "Hey, what's wrong? Because you're not acting normal." Because, like, people know that I'm high on life. Like, I'm the most hyperest person ever. People say to me, like, "Hey, you know, a good thing you ain't doing drugs, because you ain't drinking coffee or having sugar right now. You're pretty dang freaking loony toony as it is." But, like, I even say that out to, like, see if you have anything you'd want to say. Like, what are some of the individuals that when they come home, what type of encouragement or what should they do when they come home? Because things change. Like, people don't understand that. Like, they see things that we won't even ever have a clue to see. And I, you know, just, you gotta, sometimes people need a vent and let them vent. But what do you recommend they go do if they're coming back? If you have a veteran that's listening to this right now, when this is posted, what is your recommendation?
You know, I think you kind of hit it right on the head there. Is, you know, that when we come back, you know, even though we get, you know, classes, trust me, 30-day cycle of coming back from deployment, you're winding down, you're going through classes of, you know, and you know, these family counselors, family advocate outreach, you know, personnel are telling you that, hey, I know you're coming home, I know you're excited and everything else, this and that, but you got to understand your family, you know, your wife and kids, your husband and kids, has this life outside of you. You know, they've been doing things without you for the last, you know, like I said, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, everything. You can't come back and interrupt that cycle. You know, you can't come back and be all down on Johnny and Susie. You know what I mean? Even though they're your kids, they have gotten used to just, hey, mom, hey, you know, or hey, dad. And that's really hard to reintegrate when you come back from, you know, especially like in a combat zone. I can't even imagine. I can't even speak for combat veterans like that. But, you know, just for me coming back from a normal, you know, cycle deployment and everything like that, and coming home and trying to, you know, I mean, from literally, I mean, little intimate times with your family to, you know, dealing with your kids, you know, and it's really hard not to want to step in and, you know, daddy said, you know, and it scares the kids because they're not used to having that figure there, you know, for me. And, you know, and I don't know how it is, you know, with having mom come home, you know, it's a little bit different bond with kids and their mom, but it's just a fact of it's really tough, you know, and absolutely, you know, even as veterans, even now being outside of the world, every now and again, I got to go talk to somebody, because I'll tell you, 3 years later down the road, trying to recycle back into this whole civilian sector, getting that military mentality out of my mind, I can't just walk up to my boss and be like, hey, you know, what, you know, whatever I want to call you at the time, you know what I mean, kind of deal, right, like we do in the military, you know, and I can't swear, and I can't say, hey, you know, how about you just keep your mouth shut and keep your opinion to yourself, you know, you can't say that in the civilian sector, you know what I mean, right. Hey, I appreciate your input. I'll take that under advisement. You know what I mean? So it's a whole different world from stepping in from the world of camouflage in the military, stepping in the civilian sector, you know, and, you know, HR and things like that. You don't have that in the military. You can't run to an HR department. Oh, my, you know, my master sergeant yelled at me. Suck it up, buttercup. It's going to keep coming. You know, right. We're here in the civilian sector now with all these snowflakes and everything like that. And that might give me a little bit of trouble. I don't know, but you know, softer, gentler people, you got to be a little bit nicer and, you know, easier on them. But, you know, I do, you know, I still go and talk to people from time to time because I get frustrated. You know what I mean? Because the day to day life, you know, in the civilian sector, you know, it's just different. You know, I got to go on there and be like, hey, you know, this is what I'm having troubles with, you know, give me a little advice. What do I got to do? You know, and everything else. And I mean, that's very important, you know, and, again, for any veteran that comes home, I mean, obviously you need to talk to somebody, you know, it's great to having friends and it's great having buddies, but you sit down with your war veteran buddy over a beer, over a campfire is not it. You know, you need to talk to somebody, you know, a professional, a licensed counselor, you know, psychiatrist, whatever. And it's not weakness. A lot of us think that it is, you know, oh, I got to go talk to somebody. It means I'm weak and everything else. No, absolutely not. You know, you go and talk to somebody and you'd openly talk to them about what's going on, you know, to get the help that you need. And, you know, or just whatever off your chest, if you can't talk about it with your spouse, you know, that's what they're there for. You know, that's the diffuser. So,
right.
Absolutely.
I mean, I got to give a shout out to my close friends. I mean, they were there for my ex-father-in-law when he passed away, since he was in the Navy. They weren't doing financially so good because he had a cancer, lung and bone cancer. And so they were there to support. They, you know, had their connections and called the flag riders and everything else to, you know, to be able to give him a proper burial out at the military cemetery. They also did that for my father, who was in the Navy. They have a motorcycle club, and it's the U.S. Veterans Motorcycle Club, South Dakota State. They're on Facebook, and they always tell me to make sure that if you see anybody, make sure that, you know, to tell them, hey, you know, if you have the capabilities, go on there, reach out to them. They like doing things for other veterans. They like to, like, if somebody's having an issue, like, they're having, like, I have a friend that sometimes he gets so stressed and gets so, like, you know, it almost feels like, and I use the example, and he didn't use this example, but I used this, like, almost he was getting claustrophobic within civilian life. And so it was kind of like, yep, driving him, you know, like, nervous and stuff. And so I just reached out to them and said, hey, you know, I have a buddy that's doing this, you know, is there anything that I can do to, you know, recommend to him? He goes, here, just let me talk to him. So they talk to him, because, I mean, there's things that you guys can talk about that we can't. I mean, I can't talk to my grandfather, you know, about stuff that he's seen in the Korean War. You know, I can have a civil conversation, you know, try to calm him down and be like, hey, grandpa, I know, I love you, you know, you're okay, you're here. But that stuff, I mean, he's, you know, he's getting into his 90s. Like, that stuff doesn't go away, and people need to understand that. I don't think a lot of people do. What's sad to me as a nephew, a brother-in-law, you know, a cousin, you know, whatever formality I'm in on this case, but it's just like, everybody needs to, like, settle down a little bit, because I think too many people are getting too angry and not looking at the real issues. Like, the real issues is taking care of you guys, like, making sure that we're there for them, or even the families that have their, you know, relatives, whatever form of relatives that are overseas that are serving. Like, just, you know, be grateful for what you got, because I think a lot of people aren't as grateful as they used to be. And I think that's where we've kind of, like, had people, you know, start arguing with each other. And we get this, you know, like, try to sweep things under the rug type of ordeal. Like, you can't. You gotta, you know, don't be afraid. You know, just because, you know, somebody says that, you know, you're being this way or that way, you know, let it out. I'm not afraid to admit, I've cried several times because I worry about my family members, my sister. You know, my dad passed away. I had a really hard time with it. And I was worried about my sister because my brother-in-law joined the National Guard. And I can't imagine. She's taking care of a newborn child while he's, you know, he did, you know, I got respect for him. He didn't do anything wrong by leaving. But, like, you know, I saw that she was stressing out. And, like, you just got to be there for him, because too many people are just not, you know, I don't even want to say the wrong word, because sometimes I'm not good with words, but, you know, you just got to understand, like, you don't have to be this tough guy and not, or tough lady, to, like, not notice. Like, some people might be having a bad day because of that situation, because they have relatives over there. And I just hope people, like, you know, understand this, that hear this, like, hey, it's not a bad thing to sit there and listen. You know, you don't, it just, they need somebody to talk to, and let them say what they need to be. It might sometimes scare the living shit out of you, but let them, you know, let them speak, let them get it out, because otherwise, you know, I don't think anything's ever going to be, I don't even know where I'm going with it, really, but I just, people need to be more considerate, you know, be more willing to know that it's okay to, like, let tears out, okay to show emotion, because I think that's where we're having a lot of issues with.
Yep.
But,
absolutely.
One of the things I want to point out with is that you said that you wanted to go into the military as a kid. Who were your big influences within your family or friends that were in the military before you, that you kind of just decided, hey, you know what, I think I'm going to go to the Marines? Or was that something that you just saw because you checked out the recruiters?
Out there in Oneida, it's kind of a pretty good size National Guard presence out there with unit being in Pierre there, and so a lot of my high school buddies had went to the National Guard, and they'd done the basic training between their junior and senior year. Then they went off to their AIT after their senior year. Then got tuition assistance and all that stuff to go to college. And two of my buddies from growing up in Blount, Jason Christensen and Greg Chapin, they're 2 years older than us, and they actually went the Marine Corps route, and they'd come home a few times, not only on like boot camp leave, but also like recruiter assistant leave and things like that. And we talked about it. And I wasn't really dead set on the Marine Corps at first, to be 110% honest. Another big influence with South Dakota, is Ellsworth Air Force Base out there by Rapid City.
Right.
Growing up every year for, like 6-7 straight years, that was kind of our family vacation. We'd go out to Rapid City right before school started. You do the Ellsworth Air Force Base air show, and we'd go into, the Rushmore Mall and stay at the Rushmore Plaza or whatever, the big 180-foot water slide, blah, blah, blah. And so that's kind of where I got my first kind of real, like, oh, this is cool. Like these fighter planes and stealth planes and all this other stuff, and being on the air base and things like that. And then, like I said, knowing the friends. So I wasn't really 110% dead on the Marine Corps and the way it actually happened. So coming into my senior year, I had called in the big Pierre Mall, I call it, like 10 stores, but I'm out there in Pierre. There was an Army recruiting. Yeah, the Mega Mall. Old school back then. But they had an Army recruiting station, and then they had the Air Force recruiting station there. And so being subjected to Ellsworth Air Force Base and the Air Force and all that stuff and everything kind of going up, I was like, oh, that'd be kind of cool. A shop that maybe kind of be close to home and everything else. And I thought, like, boy, that'd be pretty cool. So I filled out a letter and shoved it under their door. I made multiple calls to their recruiting station. Never got a word back. And then lo and behold, I think we're just finishing up the football season come November. And I was sitting at home one night, and it was like a Tuesday or Wednesday night, and there was a knock on my door, and I opened up the door, and there he was, my recruiter. He was in full dress blues. He had the dress blue jacket on with the the blues trousers with the red blood stripe, all of his medals and the white cap, and it was done. It was just, yeah, I'm looking for Terry. You found him. And so he came in, and we jaw-jacked for like two and a half hours. Next thing I know, about a week later, he's back at my house. Mom baked him supper, and like, where do I sign? Where do I get rid of this kid at? And so we did that. And then that following week, I talked to my buddies at school there. The three other guys I went to basic training with, Eric Paxton, Jared Martin, Chad Zimmerman. And Chad Zimmerman is actually still in the Marine Corps today, 25 years later. He's a master gunnery sergeant. He's an E-9. He's stationed in Camp Pendleton. He's been all around the world. He's done embassy duty. He's been to Iraq and Afghanistan, a handful of times with his wife, Annelle, and daughter, Ashley. And he's still representing us out there and doing good things. And just great, great lifestyle and great things for him and his family. And we're so proud of him. And but that's how it happened, And when we come on recruiting duty, there's this motto in the recruiting stations: first to contact, first to contract. And that's very true. When you get these, like say to South Dakota, say to Minnesota, a lot of the Midwest schools, it's mandatory for the kids to take the ASVAB their junior year. And most of the time, the kids are only like, oh, this is like another SAT thing. You know what I mean? And so the kids put on there, hey, my future plans are 2-year college, 4-year college, technical school, trade school, military, or unknown. And so the recruiters, we get, because, federal government sends grants and stuff like that to the schools, so we get copies of those ASVABs as they come in from the schools. And that's the first thing you're doing, man. You're grabbing the highlighter and you're looking for the kid that put military, 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 military.
Right.
And I mean, it legitimately is like that, Charles. I mean, it's literally first to contact, first to contract. You don't believe how many kids, that it's that way. Now you do have your hardcore kids where, hey, my dad was Army, my grandpa was Army, my great granddad was Army, I'm going Army, and that's cool. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And, but you have those kids that have never had anybody serve in the military, or maybe dad served in the Guard for like 6 years, and they're like, yeah, but that wasn't really the military thing. Like, I want to go full time. I don't want to do the stay around here kind of thing. And, but kids from all walks of life. You know, kids have 100 different reasons why they join the military, 100 different reasons why they join the Marine Corps or the Army or the Navy or whatever they do, you know, whether it's family tradition, they're just looking for, you know, school, or if they're looking for a challenge, or they want to be the best, you know, at the Marine Corps, you know, or whatever. And so, but yeah, I mean, that's what we look for as recruiters. And then, so that's kind of how it happened for me. You know, I was pretty much dead set on saying, yeah, I'm going to go to the Air Force, but I thought it was just so rude. Like, boy, their numbers must be so good, you know, looking back now that I know how it works and right. The whole recruiting thing works. And, but yeah, I mean, I'm grateful that my recruiter showed up there, and, I'm still in contact with him today. Ole McDonald's his name. He's a car salesman up in North Dakota, and, super good dude, still fishing, still knows us by name. And, you know, we drop a line every now and again, say, you know, like today, messaging all my buddies because today's the Marine Corps birthday, you know, so I've been messaging all my Marine Corps buddies all day long. Happy birthday, Marine, you know, and on Facebook and, you know, and things like that. And so, yeah, it means a lot, man. And so, you know, I guess last thing I'll say, and I don't want to interrupt you there, but
no, go ahead.
The thing about the military, man, you know, a lot of college people, you know, they go to college and they join sororities, but I tell you, the military is the best sorority in the world, you know, to compare it. You know, what you and your fellow brother went through and what you go through on a day-to-day basis of literally blood, sweat, and tears, and you ask this guy that you've never met in your life that's from, I don't care if he's from America, South America, Africa, Europe, wherever the hell he's from, to put your life in his hands and to have him put his life in your hands, nobody knows what that means. I mean, that means brother, you know what I mean? That's what the maternal brotherhood to me ultimately is, you know, meeting these guys from all walks of life, you know, here in South Dakota. And, you know, I don't know how to properly say it because I'm not good with words either, but, we didn't really see a whole bunch of, you know, African-American males. We didn't see a whole lot of Latino males. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? You know, Ethiopian, Somalian, you know, Israeli and Indian, you know what I mean? You didn't get a lot of exposure to that here, you know, growing up in South Dakota and stuff like that. And so, you know, that was one of the coolest things for me when I went to the military. You know, I'm standing there first day on these yellow footprints with like 106 other dudes from, I mean, literally, you know, the entire world. These kids come just like me to be a Marine, you know. So, you know, the first guy I ever say I was really, you know, friends with, like with an African-American male or, you know, a Latino male and stuff like that, was in the military, you know, and learning about them and their culture and where they come from, you know, from the South and from the North, like I said, from Europe or Pakistan, you know, or wherever. And it was so cool, you know, that experience. And for, you know, guys like me. And so, I mean, that was awesome, you know, getting to learn, you know, people from all over the world. And my first roommate in the Marine Corps, he was from Seoul, South Korea, and he was adopted in America a couple of years after his birth or whatever, but he was from Del City, Oklahoma, and he really turned me on to the whole sushi thing and California rolls and everything like that. And so I'm forever grateful for him for that, but never had that kind of cool cuisine either. So it's just really awesome, you know, the things that the military can do for people and the people that you'll meet and the bond and friendships that'll last forever, you know. Your high school classmates come and go, you know, you come in and out of contact, but you never lose contact with those from the military, man. I have so many people on my Facebook and everything page and everything else that follows me that, you know, are my true, I consider them my true friends, you know, my true right. brothers, my true sisters, because of that bond of what we've shared, because, you know, the things that we've done. So,
well, I can confirm this though, because you're not too far off of we're not going to go into actual detail of what age we are, but we're not too far off from each other. And there's not a lot of minorities other than Native Americans in South Dakota. So, like, depending on where you are in the state, you don't see different cultures. Like, I know from one main area that my whole family on my mom's side's from, in this small community, there wasn't at the time that I remember being there going to visit. It's crazy that I could still remember this as like a one or 2 year old, but, there was no other like minorities there. It was just all, you know, Irish, Dutch, Norwegian, you know, kind of, you know, just that's it. And then when we finally, our family moved to Vermilion, that's when I started seeing other cultures, and I absolutely love it. So yeah, you're just, for other people to understand, when they say that you live in South Dakota and you're kind of in the middle of nowhere, you're kind of in the middle of nowhere. So
yes, you are. Yep.
So, no, I appreciate your time coming on the show. It's just, this is kind of a small, really, really small way to give back and give you a platform to, you know, tell your stories, tell you what you wanted to say, hear everything, because I love hearing this. I always have fun. One of my greatest times that I had, I'll say this right before we go, is sitting watching football. And I may not be a fan of certain teams, but I tell you what, you know, for a young kid that likes the Minnesota Vikings, that had a classmate play for the Vikings, and then sitting next to one of my schoolmates, I think she was just a year or two older than me, but her dad was in the military and went through Vietnam, and he's a Bears fan. And watching football with him was just a riot, man. We both had a good time. He was one of my best friends to watch football with. And that's the thing. These guys are awesome to hang out with. Just give them a chance. Go hang out with them. I know my grandfather, loved that dude. He was in the Korean War, like I said. Baseball, he loves baseball. So, you know, find that niche. Go and talk to him. Have a good time with them. It's all fun because they probably know people that you didn't even realize they know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, my wife says it all the time. I can't go anywhere in Sioux Falls, you know, anywhere in the surrounding community that I don't know somebody from the military or from the military. And she's like, do you not know anybody? Like, seriously, I can't take you anywhere.
That's so, when you're supposed to, like, whisper in her ear going, I'm Batman.
Yeah, that too. That helps too. But, no, you hit it on the head, man. I mean, you'll meet some of the coolest people you've ever met from the military, just from their experience and the cool stories they'll have to share. Yeah, you may hear some colorful language, but that's just the way we speak. And but a thing or two, you're going to laugh your ass off. You're going to learn some catchphrases, some new phrases that you've never heard anybody ever say in your life, man. It's an amazing brotherhood. And it's such an honor to have shared that and spent that, you know, my time with the guys. And it's been awesome. You know, look back, I would do it all over again. You know, I don't know if I'd do anything different, but I would definitely do it all over again. And, I tell everyone the same thing, you know, you never know. And I'm a firm believer. I feel that everybody should serve at least a year or two, you know what I mean, if they're able to. And the life lessons that you'll pick up and learn and about, you know, direction and discipline and things like that, it's amazing the things that you do in the military, because there's a lot of unknowns, or a lot of again, I'm not good with words, what's the word I'm looking for, there's a lot of rumors, there's a lot of, you know, untrue things about the military that I think it's just been passed down for too long from maybe the Vietnam era, and no one's really stepped foot in the modern military, or they just don't want to listen to it, they don't want to listen to facts. But the military does so many good things for so many people, and more and more people join the military now than ever, and there's a reason for that, and because of the benefits that you get, and the things you get to do is just unreal and unbelievable. So,
right, a lot of people just need to quit listening to other people and just go ahead and try it. Think for yourselves. You might be amazed, especially if you know that you're, you know, a troubled kid that always gets in trouble, and you want to change something. Give this a shot. I mean, I know a lot of them that have had hard times, and they come back and they're a different person. It's not for everybody, but at least give yourself a chance to be that better person. And then you can make those steps better in life. That's for sure. Yep. I did want to say one thing though. You brought up to my attention in my head here, a thought when you said that there's a lot of entertaining people. There is, because there's one individual that is a veteran that lives in Ohio that came to visit the other motorcycle club, and dang it, that dude, I keep telling him he needs to be like going to comedy clubs. They're not raunchy jokes, but he had me rolling like a Robin Williams had me rolling. And this is the kind of talent. I mean, you have country singers, you have pro athletes, you have pro wrestlers, that movie actors that come out of this. It's amazing on the people that you can meet. So don't lose that chance to meet those great people. That's for sure.
Yep. Absolutely.
Well, Terry, thank you very much for coming on the show. I appreciate it. Happy Veterans Day. Thank you for your service once again. I know that's a repeated thing that I could say like a broken record, and I'm not going to apologize for it. I hope you have a great time. Let people know what Batman's up to, and we'll end the show from there.
You know, Batman don't have a whole lot coming up now. We have, I think our next outing is, we're in Hartford, I think on November 22nd for the mother son dance out there at the Hartford. I think it's in the gym there at the high school. December 3rd, we have the Horizon Health Foundation, annual charity banquet up in Howard, South Dakota. But otherwise, that's kind of about where we're at right now. We're kind of slowing down for the year, so it's kind of nice to kind of wind down and let the caping cow kind of hang on its hanger there for a little while and to take a break from a good busy year. And we'll look forward to, you know, getting things going after Christmas again and start rocking and rolling and revving things up for next year. So
Awesome.
more good stuff to come.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, thank you once again. You have a good day.
You too, man. Thank you.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.
Is it your dream to become a professional wrestling superstar, manager, or referee? Well, you can make that dream a reality by training with Midwest All Pro Wrestling. Learn from former WWE superstar and NXT coach Eugene Nick Dinsmore. Classes are training right now, so go to MidwestAllPro.com and click on training to enroll today.
And remember, check out our friends, Bear Within Us, with their hit song, Baker, on Spotify and iTunes today.
Imagine a world where boring DJs play the same 40 songs over and over.
Another deep cut by Aerosmith, Walk This Way on Boring 102.7.
Where radio stations play 16 minutes of commercials every hour.
This is Gary from Gary Chevrolet.
And I'm Carrie from Jerry Chevrolet.
Where the request line just rings. And rings, and rings, and rings. That would suck.
Radio doesn't have to suck. The only live local rock and roll radio show anywhere in the Sioux Empire. Actually playing music in the morning and the music you want to hear. Your requests at 605-215-5272. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Tune in at kbackradio.com, on Apple Music, or on your Alexa or Google Home-enabled device. Also on the Live 365 and TuneIn mobile radio apps. kbackradio.com. This isn't some corporate VP of programming's rock. This is our rock.